This hour, Iowans remember the death of a president 50 years ago.
It was like killing off a family member or a parent or someone that significant in your life.
Kennedy was snuffed of life as some very serious issues were about to be taken on in new ways.
It was as if the world was going to end.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we commemorate John F. Kennedy by talking with Iowans who remember that tragic day in 1963. Senator Charles Grassley, longtime Iowa Congressman Jim Leach, Representative Dave Loebsack, University of Iowa President Sally Mason, presidential historian Tim Walch, and Iowa Public Radio's own Dean Borg. They'll tell us where they were when they got the news and reflect on Kennedy's legacy. Remembering Kennedy, first this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, remembering the death of this nation's 35th president 50 years ago. Many of you, like me, were not alive in 1963 or were too young to remember. So today, we want to turn to some Iowans who do have vivid memories of that day. Many alive at the time will remember the news of the shooting delivered by Walter Cronkite of CBS News.
There has been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from Dallas Airport into downtown Dallas, along with Governor Connally of Texas. They've been taken to Parkland Hospital there, where their condition is as yet unknown.
Then, a few minutes later, confirmation of Kennedy's death.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
And then silence as Cronkite struggled to keep composure before continuing.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Joining me now, Congressman Jim Leach, who served Iowa for 30 years, from 1977 to 2007. Congressman Leach, welcome back to the program.
Well, Ben, pleased to be with you.
How old were you in 1963 at this time?
I had just turned 21. I was a senior in college.
Mm-hmm. So take us back to that moment when you learned of the president being shot.
Well, I was on my way early to a football meeting. Football practice was to follow. And I was approached on my campus, which was at Princeton, New Jersey, by a fellow student with the news. And I stopped and just kind of stood there for a moment and then turned around and actually decided to go to the club I belonged to. My university had clubs instead of fraternities, and I went to it because it had a television set, and there was a group gathered around the television and in a very somber way, and we just sat and remained mesmerized for hours with virtually no conversation. Everyone was deep in their own thoughts.
What were your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts were of a deep dismayment. I didn't have any sense of the world falling apart or that there was a need for being fearful of something, but I was absolutely appalled at what I considered to be kind of an assault on our way of life and on American democracy. I mean, that's what assassination is. And I looked at the Kennedy presidency, as we all did, terrifically promising endeavor. I mean, the president basically remained a president of promise rather than fulfillment and was snuffed of life as some very serious issues were about to be taken on in new ways. And at the time, domestically, this was the beginning center point of the civil rights movement, which, in a fulfillment sense, on a legislative agenda, Lyndon Baines Johnson moved forthrightly on. But Johnson lacked the spirit of the times, the sense of idealism that was infused in the Kennedy administration.
Back to that point, you said promise unfulfilled. How often have you thought, or what are your thoughts on what might have been had JFK not been killed?
Well, in a logic way, a bit differently than some. Kennedy had committed us to Vietnam, and the great buildup was under Lyndon Baines Johnson, and so Kennedy, advocates like to say Kennedy would have taken a different path. That's unknown, totally unknown. We just don't have the faintest idea how individual presidencies would respond. In fact, it's war where presidents have the greatest discretion. I mean, for example, if you take recently the war against Iraq, if Al Gore had won that razor-thin election in 2000, would he have taken the same path or a somewhat different path? Would John F. Kennedy have taken the same path or a somewhat different path than Lyndon Johnson? We have no idea. We do know in civil rights that JFK would have gone the same direction as LBJ. We don't know if he'd have been quite as successful. I happen to think he would have, but that's a personal surmise, and we're dealing entirely in the realm of conjecture.
Jim Leach, a lot of conjecture on this point. Do you believe Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole assassin, alone responsible for the shooting?
Well, I'm not a conspiratorialist. The public polling data says two-thirds of Americans have some doubts. My guess is it's about a 98% likelihood that Lee Harvey Oswald was a sole assassin. But there is always this little bit of frailness to notions of fact that haven't been filled in, and then a bigger query because there are so many unknowns.
Why do you think JFK's death, his legacy, keeps our national psyche so busied and bedeviled?
Well, I mean, JFK presented a different image of a president that actually has affected everyone since. I mean, for example, I can remember as a teenager asking my father once who he thought would make the ideal president. My dad served in Europe under General Eisenhower, and so he was very strongly for Ike. But I remember his response, well, I think the ideal president would be the president of GM. And that was the middle-class kind of business person's judgment. And you have an image, the president of GM would be a stolid businessman.
A Robert McNamara.
Yeah, in a way. But with JFK, I mean, politics has been ruined for the stolid, Herbert Hoover type who lacked charm but had enormous ability.
Mm.
And now we expect a president to have charm. We expect a president to have vigor. And so John F. Kennedy changed the way Americans looked at the political process.
Congressman Jim Leach, we appreciate your time and your reflections on this somber remembrance of the death of John F. Kennedy 50 years ago. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, and this day we're remembering a day 50 years ago and the death of the 35th President of the United States at the hands of an assassin. And joining us now with her memories of it, University of Iowa President Sally Mason. President Mason, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I understand you, as a young woman at this time, are in New Jersey going to school?
I am. I'm in, I believe, middle school. I was 13 years old when President Kennedy was assassinated. I don't think anyone who was alive at that time forgets where they were.
Mm-hmm. So tell me precisely where you were actually in class, in a hallway, or where?
I was on hall patrol duty, if you can imagine that.
Really?
Yes, I was. I was, you know, I attended big public schools, And hall patrol was something that if you were a responsible, good student, you could volunteer to be on hall patrol. And I was always a ready volunteer for hall patrol and standing in the hall waiting for classes to change when I recall seeing a teacher coming out of a classroom crying and wondering what on earth is going on. And it wasn't long before word started to spread that the president had been killed. And everyone was in shock. It was just an amazing time. We were all in shock. We were all standing around just wondering, what on earth does one do?
Did classes go on at all, or were you allowed to, were you talking about it with teachers or anything?
Classes went on for a short period of time that day. We were sent home that day, is my recollection. Before the end of the day, we all settled back into a classroom, and I think as the shock started to reverberate through everybody's minds at that time, it became clear that the wise thing would be to just send the students home and shut things down. And I recall going home and turning on the television set. Now, remember, this is early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Television then was not what it is today, so the 24/7 news cycle is certainly not what everyone's used to. But certainly, that was all that was on TV.
Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts at that time? It's clear we were in shock. I'm just trying to figure out, what are the details of the shock? Fear for the country? Fear for what?
You know, I think I was too young to really understand what a fearful time it was for the country. What I recall, and I recall this vividly, because John F. Kennedy was really the first president that I remember as a 13-year-old. You know, before that, presidents were important people in the country, and I wasn't really aware of how presidents were necessarily even elected or who was even running.
Right.
But at 13, we were acutely aware of this young, charismatic president. Probably our generation. If you were a teenager at that point in time, you were aware of this president.
With a beautiful wife and kids in the White House.
And young children. And it was just, it was too close to home for those of us of that age. It was like killing off a family member or a parent or someone that significant in your life. And none of us had experienced anything like that before in terms of assassinations.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything that family members did at this time when you got home, how your family reacted in the days that followed or on that day?
Well, I know my dad was working and continued to work. My mother was at home, and so she was there when my brother and I got home from school, and we were quiet. It was just a quiet time. It was there wasn't a lot of talk about anything. It was sad. There was a great deal of sadness. And everywhere you went, people were very, very saddened by what had happened, as well as shocked.
Yeah. Why do you think it is that, of course, this assassination is shattering or really shakes a country and its people, but why do you think 5 decades have passed and it continues to captivate our national consciousness with such intensity?
It's a good question. Like I say, it was for so many of us, it was the first time. It was my dad fought in World War II, and I think it never occurred to him that that kind of violence could occur in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Against someone. And since then, I think enough incidents have happened, attempts at assassination or even successful assassinations. It wasn't that many years later that Robert Kennedy and then Martin Luther King Jr. All were assassinated. And while those, and I have specific memories of those, I don't remember as vividly where I was and what the whole sense of the country was around those incidents.
Mm-hmm.
The only other incident in my lifetime where I can tell you precisely where I was and precisely how I felt and who I was with was September 11th.
Yeah, I think we can all do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a leader yourself, President Mason, do you think you were inspired at all by John F. Kennedy?
I was most definitely inspired by leaders of that time. I was a child of the Sputnik generation, and the reason I became a scientist was as much out of a sense of patriotism that was instilled in me by my dad in particular as a World War II veteran as anything else. And when the call to really come to the aid of the country and win the space race and not let the Russians win, that was real, that was tangible. Mm-hmm. In my generation. And that certainly was also a part of what John F. Kennedy was all about.
University of Iowa President Sally Mason, thank you for your time and your reflections on the tragedy that struck 50 years ago.
Thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thinking back to November 22nd, 1963, the death of a U.S. President, John F. Kennedy, the 35th president of the U.S., and we're getting some reflections from people in our news, prominent Iowans. And joining me now, Representative Dave Loebsack, Democrat of Iowa's 2nd District. Representative Loebsack, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben, for having me on. I appreciate it.
You were 10 years old about at this time?
Yeah, that's right. I was 10, almost 11. I was in the 6th grade at Longfellow Elementary School in Sioux City. And yeah, I remember it all too well. Also, it was the birthday of my grandmother at that time, and we were living with her at the time, and it was pretty emotional, as you might imagine. I remember the teacher was sobbing when she told us the news, and I think a lot of folks who were in school at that time probably had pretty much the same experience.
Yeah, so you were actually sitting in your classroom as a 10-year-old, and the teacher, do you remember exactly what the teacher said? Is that the first news you got there?
That was the first news that we got of the assassination itself. And, you know, when you're 10 years old, a lot of this doesn't sink in, you know, quite as much as it would if you're much older. But it was, you know, clearly everybody knew it was a tragedy. Really only in the days following did we sort of begin to understand just how much of a tragedy it was. But I have been watching some of the programs recently. I'm reading Robert Dalek's book right now, as a matter of fact, on JFK. He's a historian who wrote a book on JFK's cabinet. So, you know, I'm looking back trying to remember as best I can, you know, for given that I was 10 years old,
yeah,
about that weekend. But I do remember the funeral. I remember the procession, just a lot of things about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember talking about it with friends and family or classmates at all?
Oh, sure. I mean, given that it was such a tragedy and it was right around Thanksgiving, there was just a lot going on at that time. As I said, it was my grandmother's birthday as well. It was a very, very difficult time. Everyone really, truly was in mourning. You have to keep in mind, too, that the president was pretty darn popular among the American people at that particular moment in his short time that he was in office. So I think that was, I think that had made it have even more of an effect.
I think I heard you mentioned you're currently reading a book about JFK.
Right.
And there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of books written about Kennedy in the intervening 50 years. I wonder, what are your thoughts on all these conspiracy theories? Cubans, Soviets behind it, the mafia, even the military-industrial complex in some theories.
Well, there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there. There's no question about that. And I don't know that anyone has all the answers. I think that with today's technology, you know, we'd have a much clearer picture of exactly what happened that fateful day if we had had a lot of the technology that we have now. But I think those conspiracy theories will certainly live on into the future. There's no question.
Mm-hmm. It certainly made the Secret Service think about how to protect a president and public officials, too. And you are a public official. Does that give you pause sometimes?
Oh, no question about it, especially when we go through difficult times here in this country. You know, as a member of Congress, there are times when I will think about 9/11 and how it must have been, you know, on Capitol Hill at that time. And of course, the other tragedies that have happened over the years to public officials, you do think about that from time to time. There's no question, and especially recently when the woman was you know, driving out of control right near the Capitol, and she eventually was stopped, and of course she was shot not that far away from the Capitol over by the Hart Senate building. So things like that make you think about the vulnerabilities, there's no question. But it's more, you know, from my point of view, keeping the American people safe that I think about.
Mm-hmm.
Congressman Loebsack, will you be doing anything special on Friday to mark that day?
No, I'll just be commemorating it in my own private way. It is going to be a time to remember his legacy. There's no question about that. And, you know, I think of kind of the bigger picture, too, our political system and all the stresses that system is under right now. You know, the lack of legitimacy for Congress and even the presidency at this point. I have a lot of concerns about that. And I think about when JFK was assassinated, how we were fortunate that transition of power took place in a very orderly way, that Lyndon Johnson was there when we need him to be there, that John Kennedy's widow was there and very supportive when we needed her to be, and that the country was supportive when we needed the country to be supportive at a very critical time in our history.
Nevertheless, people did pick up and carry our country forward. Nevertheless, there is the question of what might have been under John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, I think that's a really great question to ask. I mean, I'm not, you know, as somebody used to teach political science and a little bit of history, counterfactual history, you know, doesn't always appeal to me, as you might imagine. We can't go back and change things. But clearly, you know, he had already introduced a number of measures on the civil rights front, for example, that Lyndon Johnson then was able to carry forward in a no small measure, I think, because of the political skills that he possessed. A majority leader in the U.S. Senate, and he was able to accomplish quite a lot of Kennedy's legacy, I think, and what Kennedy wanted to accomplish. But then we think about Vietnam and other sort of foreign policy issues and that were really unresolved. Vietnam, in particular, was unresolved at the time of JFK's death. And, of course, we saw what happened, and there are always those who kind of wonder, would he have done anything any differently? And I just don't think we can really answer that question with any degree of certainty.
Congressman Dave Loebsack, I know you have a busy day there in Washington. We thank you very much for taking a moment to share your thoughts about the assassination of John F. Kennedy and his legacy.
Always my pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Reaching out this hour to those who remember the death of JFK. How do you remember that day if you were alive or have it in your memory? Where were you? What were your friends and your family saying? How did it change you? How do you think it changed our nation? 1-866-780-9100 is our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're on Facebook as well. And you can give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Joined now by Iowa Public Radio correspondent Dean Borg, who will stay with us for the rest of the hour as we remember the Kennedy assassination. Hi, Dean.
Good morning.
We've been listening to those memories, and I know you have a few memories for us as well, and we'll get those in the second half hour. Then, as now, you were in the news business when Kennedy was assassinated right here in Iowa. Briefly, tell us, where were you?
Well, I was at the WMT stations in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, radio and television outlet, Channel 2 and Radio 600 in Cedar Rapids at the time.
Okay, Dean Borg, we'll talk with you when we return. Also, we'll hear from Senator Charles Grassley with his memories. He was working in Waterloo at the time. Also, presidential historian Tim Walsh. He was a boy at a Catholic school in Detroit. We'd like to hear about your memories. Were you alive that day? What do you remember? What were friends and family saying? What were you feeling? 1-866-780-9100. Give us a Facebook post or tweet us at IPR Talk. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Remembering the death of John F. Kennedy 50 years ago. Back with more River to River in just a moment. More of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Good to have you with us over the noon hour. Somber remembrance of the death of John F. Kennedy 50 years ago, remembering it through the accounts of people who lived at that time, Iowans, people in our community, remembering the death of the 35th president of the U.S. And we reach out to those people with those living memories for their thoughts on that day, how it changed us as a country, as a people, how it changed them personally. And we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, already several good Facebook posts. Please leave yours there with your remembrance. Also on Twitter, tweet us at IPR Talk. Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear memories of Charles Grassley on that day, also of President presidential historian Tim Walch. Before that, I want to go to my colleague, Iowa Public Radio correspondent Dean Borg, who is with us for the rest of the hour. Dean Borg, you mentioned before the break, you were in journalism at that time at WMT.
Yes.
Before we go to callers, so take us through your day.
Well, I had done the noon news broadcast and had gone to lunch with some out-of-town guests over at the Townhouse Restaurant near Lindale Plaza in Cedar Rapids. The food server came to our table and said, I think you'd like to know there's been something happening in Dallas. We think the president's been shot. We immediately got up from our table. I took my guests along with me back to Broadcast Park and into the Gold Room, which was the viewing area at Broadcast Park at that time, and a small television set, large, small screen compared to what mm-hmm. we have now. But everybody was gathered around there in the Gold Room. And Walter Cronkite, in the cuts that you've already played here, and the point where he finally gets the dispatch, the wire service dispatch. And at that time, you know, it wasn't well covered. That is, journalism wasn't prepared for what happened that day. And so the wire services were the ones who conveyed the word, and Merriman Smith and Jack Bell, AP and UPI White House correspondents, were in the motorcade, just a car or two behind the presidential limousine. And those two men, fierce competitors, because they were, you know, first on the scene and seeing what had happened, they fought over the radio telephone that was in that limousine in order to get a dispatch back to Washington on what they were observing. And Jack Bell of AP won out in that scramble and the actual grabbing and fighting over that telephone. Mm-hmm. And so that was the dispatch, the AP dispatch that Walter Cronkite first had.
And when you're here in Cedar Rapids, this is the era of an old, very large, cumbersome teletype machine that
yes.
would bring across headlines.
Yes.
And this is where you read about it.
That's right. Later, I pulled out of waste baskets at our newsroom. I pulled out the wire copy that chronicled when the first word came across. And we had five teletype machines there, AP and UPI. And at the 12:30 time, we called the split. Instead of the news coming on the teletype from New York City, it would come from Des Moines, the regional split, the regional news. And so Des Moines was on giving some Iowa news, and New York kept trying to break in. Shots have been heard along the motorcade in Dallas, Texas. And then there was a pause, and Des Moines came on and started to resend some Iowa news. And finally, New York gets on in big letters and says, get off this wire and stay off. In other words, they overrode the regional state splits, and they took over in New York City.
Dean Borg with memories of November 22nd, 1963. Let's go to calls, Dean, and listen to some other memories. A man I think you know, Pat DeLurie, is on the line, a former state senator. Senator DeLurie, welcome to
yes.
our program.
Thank you.
Give us your day.
I was a senior at Notre Dame. It was noontime, just after lunch. I was back in my room shaving, and I had the radio on, and I heard the radio interrupted with this story. We have a report from Dallas. It was confusion on the radio. We have a report from Dallas. I stopped shaving, and over the next two or three minutes, it emerged that the president had been shot.
Mm. How did it change you think?
Two things. One, I had gone to see the U.S. Senate in June of 1960, and President Kennedy, then Senator Kennedy, was floor managing an amendment, and I sat in the chamber and watched down from the gallery. Do not require college students applying for federal loans to sign a loyalty pledge that they are not communists. So I had a vivid impression of him from the summer of 1960. Of course, he was later elected president. And the second is that a group of us from Notre Dame took a car, went to Washington, D.C. So on Monday, November 25th, 1963, I stood along the street with hundreds of other Americans when the flag-draped coffin casket came by, the riderless horse, the widow walking with her two brothers-in-law, and then President Charles de Gaulle of France, Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, walking along with dozens of other world leaders behind the fallen president. It is, needless to say, unforgettable for me the way it is for most of your listeners.
Pat DeLaurie, thank you for joining us and with that remembrance of 50 years ago. Dean Borg, I spoke yesterday with Senator Charles Grassley, and I began asking him how old he was at that time and what he was up to on that day.
I would be 30 years old, and I was a part-time legislator, a small farmer on 80 acres, and I had a full-time job, except when the legislature was in session from 1961 to 1971, at a little company in Cedar Falls called Waterloo Register. We made furnace registers.
You made furnace registers?
Yes.
And so at the time when this horrible news came through, were you working there?
Yeah, I was running a little press that put the screw holes in, and that's where I stood about 8 hours a day. Working that on the assembly line, and the production manager came around on the day of the murder and said something like, "Kennedy's been shot." I don't think anybody believed him. I didn't believe him. Mm-hmm. Half hour later, he came back and said Kennedy was dead. And within a half hour or hour, they shut down the plant. I guess that was on a Friday afternoon, but they shut it down a couple hours early. Out of respect, and I suppose out of the fact that people were so appalled at the murder that, production might have not been so good anyway. From that day on, you kind of kept riveted to the TV set.
Give us a sense, for those of us who weren't around in 1963, what Kennedy meant to the country.
I think it'd be fair to say that from his election to his death, that people considered it a new beginning, because the youngest president since Theodore Roosevelt, or in Kennedy's case, the youngest president to be elected to his first day in office, that was history from the standpoint of his wife and the family values and the young kids. It was a new beginning. And then I think the horror of the murder was that people thought the new beginning had come to an end.
Were you you're obviously a Republican for many years. Were you a Republican then? Did you back Kennedy for president over Nixon in 60?
No, I was a Republican, and I backed Nixon because I was elected to the state legislature in 1958, so I was in my third term in the legislature. And yeah, I backed Nixon, and obviously Nixon lost. In our country, we have changes by evolution. We don't have changes by revolution, and you just accept the results of the election and you move on and hope for the best for the country, and it usually turns out for the best.
Did the assassination of a public figure give you any pause? As you said, you were a part-time legislator at that time, right?
Well, I think it's a whole different thing being in the state legislature. In those days, we only met every other year. It wasn't quite as public as you are now as a legislator. And if your question is, did his murder make me think in terms of maybe public life wasn't for me because it was dangerous? No, those thoughts didn't cross my mind.
You know, there are various theories, thousands of books that have been written about John F. Kennedy in the meantime, many of them about whether Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole assassin. What are your views?
Let me tell you two people I know well that were involved with that commission. I knew David Bellin, a Des Moines lawyer, to be an honorable person, and I've talked to him a few times about it. And then former, now deceased Senator Specter served with me, well, a long time in the United States Senate, and he was assistant counsel, I think, there. along with David Bellin, and he was convinced it was a single bullet, or he didn't believe in a second person being involved in the murder.
As a young burgeoning political leader at the time, did Kennedy's style influence you at all as a public leader, as a politician?
Yeah, I think so. Being very plain spoken, and I think I've ended up with a reputation of being a plain spoken person.
Well, Senator Grassley, thank you very much for your time and your reflections on John F. Kennedy's death.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to be asked to do this.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, reflecting on the death of John Kennedy this hour. We're spending time with people who have that day, that national tragedy, in their living memories. Joining me now, Tim Walch. He is the former director of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum in West Branch, also a presidential historian. How old were you in 1963, November 22nd, Tim Walch?
I was just about to celebrate, I think about 16th birthday, something like that. Mm-hmm. I was a sophomore in high school.
Where?
In the east side of Detroit at the Austin Catholic Prep School for Boys. And what's important about that, Ben, is, of course, it's a Catholic school in a town that was heavily Catholic. And John F. Kennedy was our first Catholic president. And so it was an important presidency for my community, an important presidency for me personally. He was Irish. I was Irish. He was dynamic. I'd like to say I was dynamic, but I think there was a real attachment to him personally. It was an important election for every Catholic because it was the first time a Catholic had been elected.
And that was really a question. It's hard to imagine 50 years later, but the divide between Protestant and Catholic in this country was immense.
Right. Oh, there were many people who said that a Catholic could not serve as president because he would be loyal only to the Pope. And, of course, President Kennedy, at the time, Senator Kennedy, had gone down to Houston to talk to the Ministerial Association there, which did help to change the vote, but it was very close. So at any rate, we were all very close to President Kennedy, at least within, the Catholic community. And I recall on that day in November of 1963 being in class, and an announcement came over the
public
address system. Thank you. To proceed to our gymnasium, which functioned as an auditorium, and the principal was there, and he was kind of ashen faced, and he said the president had been shot, and I couldn't fathom that he was talking about the president of the United States. I thought he was talking about the president of General Motors, which may be a function of living in Detroit. But he said the president of the United States had been shot, and we were all stunned, and we did, as would have been the common practice within Catholic schools at that time, we said a rosary. Most people don't say rosaries these days, but back then we said a common rosary, and then we were dismissed for the day.
Did you know that the president was dead at this point?
I didn't know the president was dead, but as I was leaving the auditorium, a teacher, whose name I think was Mr. Kozlowski, said, "The president is dead," or "It's official, the president is dead," something like that. I have a memory of that. And it was as if the world was going to end. I don't think I understood what it meant, and I did almost by rote what I normally would do would be, because everything at school was canceled, was to proceed to the bus stop. And there was no one around. It was as if everyone had left for some place unknown to me. And I got on the bus, and there were a number of people on the bus, and it was completely quiet. It was so quiet, it was deafening. And I went to my stop, and I got off and went home, and eventually my folks came home, and there were the proceedings on television, and it just kind of went on and on. And I think we thought the world was going to change. I remember thinking at the time, I wonder if Christmas will be canceled. It was a singular event, and for my generation, and I was born in 1947, it was that event that we all remember, and we might, there are other days too, of course, we probably remember Watergate and some others, but in our youth, you know, we talk about Don McLean talking about the death of Buddy Holly as the day the music died. Well, in some ways, when President Kennedy was shot, that was another day the music died.
Through your presidential historian eyes, we now look back 50 years to this event, this tragedy. What can you say about why we're still talking about it, why there have been thousands of books about a relatively short presidency?
I think in part it's the result of living in a media age. He was widely photographed. He's a photogenic president. It was the early age of television. So we have a lot of film footage of this young, vigorous family. The Kennedy family is still with us. Of course, his brother was serving in the Senate. His other brother, Robert, was the attorney general. They continued on a Kennedy legacy. President Johnson carried forward the Kennedy goals and hopes. It's not clear that President Kennedy would have achieved all that was achieved thanks to Lyndon Johnson. So as Johnson said, let us continue. And we have continued to aspire to what President Kennedy said in those speeches, you know, that we can send a man to the moon, to do for your country what needs to be done, and so forth. And I suppose to some extent, too, it's Mrs. Kennedy creating the notion of Camelot. We become wistful about a hero perished. In the same way, I suppose, we embrace in this part of the world Niall Kinnock, what might have been had he been able to live a full life. It's something of a love affair that continues on to the present day.
Tim Walsh, presidential historian, thank you for joining us with your reflections on this national tragedy. Nearing the hour, as we remember the death of John F. Kennedy 50 years ago, the 35th president of the United States, and we had such an outpouring, Dean Bourque, with me here in the studio of people wanting to share remembrances. We want to get to at least one or two of those here yet this hour, Dean, but we want to make our listeners aware that if you call 1-866-780-9100, you'll talk to someone, tell them your story, your remembrance. We want to feature a number of these on tomorrow's show because we are all, I am sitting here completely captivated by how this shook a nation and individuals, and we're hearing from some of those. So please do give a ring, 1-866-780-9100. We will have more of these stories on tomorrow's program at this time, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or post something on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Dean, let's go to Susan, who is calling from Ames. Hi, Susan. Your remembrance of that day?
I was taking a final test at Iowa State University in a history class taught by E.B. Smith, who was a terrific historian and teacher. And he announced, as we were taking our test, that the president had been shot. And it was not, and he was devastated. It was not until some time later that I was told by him that he had a leadership role in reelecting Kennedy for the Democratic Party, and life changed for all of us. But
how did it affect you personally, Susan? Quickly.
I was devastated because I was just beginning to get my feet interested in history and politics. And he seemed the kind of leader that young people were looking for, a very different type of president than we had had before.
Okay. Susan in Ames, thank you for that account of 50 years ago.
Thank you.
And we've got about a minute or so, a little over a minute, Dean. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing, as we end this hour, going back 5 years before the assassination, to a moment when you met then-Senator Kennedy in Iowa.
The WMT stations, I was a senior at Iowa State at that time, 1958 it would be, and the WMT stations had me on scholarship at Iowa State, and so they invited me back when they were sponsoring a national corn-picking contest that rotated among the states. It was in Iowa that year. Dwight Eisenhower came in to make the speech out in the country just outside Marion. He helicoptered in from the Cedar Rapids Airport. Everybody was up at the main stage. I mean, crowds, thousands of people. And I was walking down through what was kind of the midway and a little gravel road there, and I didn't want to elbow into the crowd. And there was a man standing inside a tent, but he was out of character. He was dressed in a dark blue suit. Everybody else was in farm clothing or at least casual clothing out there. He stuck out his hand to me and said, "Hi, I'm Jack Kennedy."
Did that name mean anything to you at that point?
It meant nothing to me at that point. It meant nothing. I'm a college senior. I didn't know this senator from Massachusetts, but he was laying the groundwork for an eventual national run.
Dean Borg, amazing anecdote there. We've come to the end of our hour. I want to make sure that you know you can still chip in your remembrance of the death of John F. Kennedy. Were you around? What is your memory? 1-866-780-9100. We'll record your contact information and get your information. For tomorrow's show, you can email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Post something on our Facebook page. We'd like to hear your short account of that day, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Also, we'll be posting the Facebook and email stories that we didn't get to on our webpage for the show. You can look for them there. Thanks to Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton, my colleagues, as well as Catherine Perkins, our executive producer. River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us. Could they die young? I just looked around.